providing you that the DG and your team, your entity, allow me to take this opportunity and greet you all and welcome you to the Portfolio Committee on Tourism, where we'll be deliberating on the first quarter performance report for 2018 and 19 by the department. And we will also be looking into the high-level panel report for the Portfolio Committee and all other items. We shall defer them to our next meeting, which will sit next week, Tuesday. At this point in time, allow me to introduce myself for the purpose of those that do not know who I am. My name is Lucy Zomakubela. On my right-hand side, I have the Secretariat of the Committee, which is Mr. Jerry Boltina, and on my left-hand side, I have Dr. Kuzwayo, who is the Content Advisor, and I will ask honorable members to introduce themselves accordingly.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members, Ladies and Gentlemen. I'm Manuku Masehela, the member of this committee from the Province of Peace, Limpopo. Thank you.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Patricia Adams, and I am from the province that they call the Northern Cape, and where we follow the sun, not the people.
Good morning, James Force from the Western Cape.
Thank you very much, DG. Over to you and your team.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Member. It's good to be back. You have had a few meetings without me present. I went through some personal family bereavement and so on. So I spent some time not at work. I also took some sick leave and so on, all those types of issues. But now I'm back and we are able to progress further. I will introduce myself as well. My name is Victor Tarake. I am from South Africa. No, Anani says Limpopo. It's not true. I am from South Africa. Thank you. We have a full team of top management that will take the honorable members through the report. And we do have some apologies. We have an apology from Murunga Rampili, who is a DDG responsible for tourism sector support services. Unfortunately, she has been hospitalized. So we have two chief directors. I will explain why we've got two chief directors here. We've got Benny Mayer, who's acting on behalf of Murunga. But we also have Melin, who was here for a different presentation in the morning with the select committee. And she is responsible for the portfolio that deals with SMEs and so on. And we thought, well, while she's here, she might as well just earn her living as well and join us, so that if there are details that you require, she will be able to provide such details in person. Benny is also fortunately going to be able to provide you more details with the incentive program as well. So at least you've got those people here. We've got another apology from the CFO. One of the things, what we normally do, the CFO hardly ever takes leave, hardly. But when we finish with the audit, I have a standing agreement with him that he goes on leave. The minute we get the final letter that says, now you can submit your report to Parliament, that time, then I say he must actually go on leave. So it was a leave that I had agreed with him that when we finish end of August, then he's going to take. And it so happened that if he was to cancel, unfortunately, he was going to incur very serious personal costs. So that one is on me. I am giving him that leave. Mohit is our director responsible for finance, and he is acting CFO, so he will be able to take us through the books. Honorable members know the DDGs. Ms. Duma is a corporate management DDG. We call her Lulama. Sometimes I call her Sis Lulama. And Shamila, Ms. Chetia, she's our DDG responsible for destination management. Anemi, I call her sometimes Madame Malam. She's our DDG responsible for international relations, research, and policy. She's also responsible for the oversight on ICT. You know Petra, honorable members, and you know Mel. Tabo is in my office. And Mr. Rabutabi, right behind us here, he's the person who's responsible for our strategic management issues in the department. He's basically sitting in for Mzama today, who for some reason also has got a problem with her leg. I don't know what she did, so, but she had to be attended to for that. We are not going to waste your time. We have a report that the DDGs are going to go through, but overall, slide 5,
I think you would continue, DG. Allow me to welcome Honorable Nkomo and Honorable Bam. They are members of the Portfolio Committee. They've just joined us now as we were concluding our apologies. Perhaps before you take over, DG, let me allow the Secretariat to give us any apologies if they are.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, we've got apologies from Honorable Treko, she will not be attending the meeting, and Honorable Kufumbok. We've got also the apologies from Minister and also from the Deputy Minister. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Fontina. You have an hour to take us through so that we also have an hour for deliberation. Let's be just mindful of the time. Thank you. Over to you, Mr. Taragi.
Thank you. On a lighter note, we had hoped that our Kumbok is here because we do have a bit of feedback on the Nelson Mandela capture site signage, which Ms. Chetia will share when she goes through the details of the report. We had the 88 targets that we had planned to do during that period. We were able to do 72 of those. 16 of those were not completed, which amounts to about 82% of what we had planned to do. There will be broader issues that will surface as they present, which would relate to what are the challenges that we faced. But they will also share some successes. But what are some of the challenges that we faced, and how are we going to overcome those challenges going into the future? And we'll try and explain what mitigation are we trying to put in place. Overall, we do feel that we are on track to achieve most of the things that we are doing, but the starting quarter is always a challenge, Shepherd, because in some of these instances, that's when you discover that some of the things that you had planned and which you were going to do in a particular way, the environment changes. And when the environment changes, we also have to adapt to the change. some of the things that disrupt you would be things that one had not necessarily foreseen. And when those come into play, then we also have to adapt to that. So you will get a lot of that when we deal with the issues related to the infrastructure program, the destination management. You will pick up that we are in a phasing in mode broadly because there are new requirements that we've got to adapt to in as far as implementation of the infrastructure program is concerned. So that forces us to change the manner in which we foresee how the same results could be achieved and so on. I will not waste any time. I think I will request that the visitors then go through this. We will start with program two, tourism research policy and international relations.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. As DG indicated, I'm going to present Program 2's performance for Quarter 1. In summary, we had 22 targets to achieve in Quarter 1, of which 86% we achieved, and 14% significant work was done, but we did not achieve it fully, and I'm going to go through all the targets. Honourable Members, on slide 8, speak to work that we do on a quarterly basis, some monitoring work and analysis work. The one speaks to airlift, and the other one speaks to visa requirements, and that work we do to inform our continuous engagements on the airlift, the route, as well as our visa reform and the work that we are doing on improving on ease of access. So those reports were done, and they did inform the engagements that we were involved in. On slide 9, it speaks to the dissemination platforms. Those are platforms that we use to disseminate our information. The first target speaks to the tourism public lecture, which we will be having on the 18th of September, but in this quarter we have to do our concept document and finalize the concept for this public lecture under the theme Tourism and Digital Transformation, which is also the theme for World Tourism Day celebration. And that concept document was developed and finalized. And then the second target speaks to a report on our research seminar. Honourable Members, you might recall that every year annually we host a research seminar where we do disseminate the research that we undertook in collaboration with the universities. And then we need to develop a report after that. And the report was subsequently developed. On slide 10, we speak to our monitoring and evaluation reports, which is quite a number, 22. But the first one speak to our NTSS implementation report. But for quarter one, we always, on an annual basis, review the framework for the implementation report just to see if there's a need to update what additional areas we need to include into the framework in consultation with stakeholders, and that framework was reviewed. We also had as a target to publish the 2617 State of Tourism Report. Honourable Members, that wasn't done, and the reason for that is that just before we wanted to publish it, new information became available. And we made a decision not to release the document, but rather to include and factor in the additional information that was released, so that at least we have a up-to-date report when we release it. And as we said, we envisage to release the report before the end of September. On slide 11, on a quarterly basis, we develop a fact sheet. Our key, as it says, it's a very short document with key facts that we develop and publish on our website. That quarterly fact sheet was developed. And on a monthly, monthly we do an analysis of the tourist arrivals when it's released by StatsSA, and that report was also, all the reports, all three of them, were developed. Slide 12 reports to the implementation of our monitoring plan for capacity building projects. And the first target was on the concept document, and that was done, the analysis. And then the second one speaks to our capacity, the evaluation of our capacity building program, and the proposal was for the impact evaluation was developed. That's now the first phase of this project. Slide 13 speaks to the seventh target, and it speaks to the implementation of the monitoring plan from infrastructure projects, and we did do a report on the analysis of the concept document for the infrastructure projects. The next one speaks to the annual report on the implementation of our signed bilaterals, and we do have the implementation plan for the signed bilaterals, and we also developed a report on the stakeholder consultation. And honourable members, we also presented to yourselves on the implementation of our bilateral multilateral engagement. Slide 14 speaks to the design of the National Tourism Information Management System, that we need to initiate the design. The design was initiated. The same with the black-owned products and services, which will form a part of the database. Then on slide 15, speaks to our annual target of the development of a biometric time and attendance system, and the design of the system was initiated as per our plan. On slide 16, we talk about our initiatives in facilitating multilateral fora and bilateral cooperation. The first target speaks to the hosting of the Indian Ocean Rim Association workshop on coastal and marine tourism. That workshop was hosted in May on the margins of Indaba. It also Target 2 speaks to the hosting of the Eora Tourism Experts meeting, and that was also hosted in May on the margins of the Indaba. Target number 3 speaks to the hosting of the Eora Tourism Ministers meeting. There was no specific target for quarter 1, as we first had to do the senior officials meeting, but Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, the plan is for the meeting to take place in October this year in Port Elizabeth. And then on slide 17, it speaks to our annual sharing of best practices workshop, and our first quarterly target speaks to the stakeholder engagement in preparation for our workshop this year, which will happen in the fourth quarter. Honourable members, as you might recall, we do it in partnership with provinces. I think this will be the third or the fourth year in partnership with the province on a rotating basis, and KZN expressed interest to co-host with us, so we are finalising those agreements to host the workshop with them. So the stakeholder engagement did take place. And then target number 5 speaks to the Indaba ministerial session, which we hosted, or Minister hosted, at Indaba this year in May. Then, Honourable Members, on slide number 18, it speaks to the 600 trained youth place for the NTMIS data collection, and the fact that the youth were not placed yet. And I think this mostly speaks to the fact that we really wanted to make sure that the building blocks and the basis is in place before we start sending out these this youth. Firstly, the concerns, the delays that we have. We are appointing a service provider to assist us with the administration in the sense of the payment of the students and that kind of work. And our first call for proposals for our first didn't yield a successful bidder, so we did have to advertise again. Secondly, we did make a decision to do a bit more stakeholder engagement with municipalities, because our aim is still to deploy the youth in the areas where they stay. So that takes a bit more work from our side to make sure that all the municipalities are on board. And the next slide will speak to, I'm sure if I remember the slides correctly, that we wanted to also make sure that our relationship with Statistics South Africa is formalized. You might recall that last year we entered into a partnership with StatsSA for the training of these youth. That was a, I can almost say informal, it wasn't formal in terms of a memorandum of understanding. We subsequently broadened the areas of the memorandum of understanding to also cover areas of methodology for data collection and so forth, and we wanted to finalize the MOU with StatsSA, which was subsequently done but not in the quarter under review. So, honorable members, I think on slide 20, which also speaks to the number of capacity building programs and the data collection, these two sort of go hand in hand, and the delays, although significant work was done, we didn't deploy the youth, but we do plan to deploy them in the third quarter, and we are still confident that we will be able to deliver at the end of the year, but we didn't want to start on a shaky ground. We wanted to make sure that everything is in place before we deploy them. I think, honorable members, those are the targets under Program 2, and Program 3 will follow. Thank you.
Good afternoon, honorable chair and honorable members. I will take you to the Destination Development Quarter 1 presentation, and it contains from slides 23 to 32. We have 15 targets, 11 of which were achieved in quarter one, and 4 where we had challenges around procurement, and I'll speak to those individually. I think that I would also like to just provide some feedback on the signage to the Nelson Mandela capture site. It's not contained in our quarterly report. We have now received confirmation from Sandville that there has been approval for the signage from the M3. There will be 2 signs from the M3, and then there will be other signage off the M3 itself. At the stage that they are currently at, they are resolving their own challenges around procuring the signs. But detailed designs have been completed, and it's simply now finalizing the procurement to get the signs developed and then constructed. Our minister is also communicating with the Minister of Transport to see if there is any way to assist to fast-track that procurement process. So that, I think, is a little bit of good news, and eventually I think that we will all celebrate when the signs are actually up and erected on the entry. If we can start then with slide 23, we have 11 destination planning initiatives, the first of which is really to work with all 9 provinces to utilize the planning manual that we have developed last year to develop for a destination in a province. We have had some challenges around the procurement of facilitators, at this point in time, we are finalizing the appointment. I'm told this will happen at a discussion tomorrow. But we're confident that despite the delays in procurement in the first quarter, that the annual target of actually planning for a destination in each of the 9 provinces will actually still take place. We have basically used the time in the first quarter to also work on our parallel process for the logistics for our consultation with provinces, so that once the service provider is appointed, which will be in this month of September, the work can commence immediately. Slide 24 talks to 2 sets of planning initiatives again. The first 2 are about precinct planning for a township, which is Khayelitsha and the Karoo region. And then the second set of initiatives is 4 master plans. I won't read them all out, but they are for various areas that are linked to our work on coastal and marine tourism. We have in fact finalized the procurement for this area of work. We are working with the Khuga Development Corporation, and they're an agency of government. The reason that we are working with them on these planning initiatives is because they are able to provide a complete turnkey solution, from working with professional services to actually doing detailed designs, and to actually managing the facilitation process. Those detailed master plans, as I said before, are really the include more than just tourism. They're about what infrastructure exists in that area. They're about what tourism assets exist in that area. They also look at elements of marketing and further development that will allow for the expansion of tourism in these areas. Slide 25 continues with planning work which is related to concept development for Clayncia Beach and Hondeklip Bay and McDougall's Bay. And procurement for this has similarly been finalized with Kuga. This work is really about being able to create plans for these campsites that then can be replicated in other similar provincial or national facilities, so that we do this smartly rather than having to redesign every time that we are trying to deal with state-owned property. And then the next initiative is around our investment work. So in the last quarter, we have been working quite closely, I think, with preparation for the Presidential Investment Summit, which is due to take place in October. So part of this work, which is about prioritizing a list of tourism investment projects and also looking at the platforms where we will promote these, actually also feed into the work that is planning for the broader investment conference, and the targets related to investment have been achieved. Slide 26 is about the ownership and operational model for our budget resorts. On this project, we have had some challenges around our procurement. Our bid actually will close on the 14th of September, and the adjudication process then will follow for the appointment of a service provider. But similarly, in terms of this work, we have been doing a whole set of work in the background to ensure that the annual target is not compromised in any way. So despite the fact that we have not achieved our quarter one target, we are on track to actually achieve the annual target related to this area of work. Slide 27 starts speaking about the work that we're doing on destination enhancement, and it's for Shangoni Gate and the Palaboa Wild Activity Hut. These are projects, as honourable members will be aware, are being implemented in partnership with Sand Parks. Our target for this quarter was around completing a concept report. The concept report basically sorts out all of the necessary approvals that are required. It also looks at the conceptual designs. It looks at further studies that support the development, like traffic studies and ecological studies, and other forms of impact assessment. So largely what the concept is to actually ensure that the viability of the project is sorted out in order for it to proceed. And that target has been achieved for both those projects. The next one is related to our universal accessibility projects. We are actually running those at 4 different sites across the country. We also have finalized our procurement strategy for this work, and the next two targets relate to our targets for EU-funded projects. So these projects are the Dinosaur Interpretation Center, which is being constructed in Clarence in the Free State. At this point in time, I think that all of the process around the designs have been finalized. The contractor has been appointed, and in fact, they will break ground on the site in September. So construction on the site is going to commence in September. Slide 29 actually talks to the other project that is funded by the European Union, and this is the Bavianskloof World Heritage Site. There are two elements to that project. The first element is a leopard trail, which is being designed through this newly declared site, and the second one is an interpretation center complex. Essentially, what has happened with these two, and these are the last two targets that haven't been met, is that they have been implemented through the Eastern Cape Provincial Tourism Authority. They actually advertised their bid, and in fact, they advertised their bid towards the end of February this year, so before the quarter even began. But they were also not able to make an appointment in terms of the bids that they received. So when we were doing the planning for this work in November, we had absolute certainty that because they'd already commenced procurement processes before the beginning of the financial year, that they would in fact have been able to make the appointment of professional service providers. But they had procurement challenges and they were unable to do so. We received written confirmation, in fact, just yesterday from the ECPTA that they have now appointed the professional service provider. So this work will continue. There may be some delays around the actual construction, but this is basically a project that is funded over the next 3 years. So the project timeline in terms of it being completed within 3 years will still be met. Within that, we might have just had these slight delays right at the very beginning. If we can then move to slide 31, it talks to the interpretive signage that we are doing at a sixth site. This work is closely aligned to the sites that we have selected also for the universal accessibility work. That work is pretty much on track. We have essentially finalized how we will do this work with the management authorities, and we've concluded all of our agreements, and the work will similarly progress. We're not anticipating any real challenges with completing this work in any way. The last one then related to our destination enhancement initiatives is the Indian Atlantic Route. Honorable members will be aware that of what we were doing was to actually last year finalize the work around the supply and demand of all of the products along the coastline. So this is about unifying all of our offerings from a coastal and marine tourism perspective. What we are now doing is working very closely with stakeholders to look at the gaps that exist between supply and demand so that we can actually develop our product development strategy and at the same time work on what we're marketing from that perspective. And then the very last target, which is contained on slide 32, relate to the full-time equivalents for our expanded public works program. Honourable members will know that this is always a target that we sometimes hit and sometimes miss. I think in this instance we have actually missed, but in a good way, because we've exceeded the number of targets of full-time equivalents that were anticipated for this quarter. It was 500 that we planned for, and we actually have 729 full-time equivalent jobs that were created in the quarter. The reason for this is because, as I said in the past, we've learned through our experience that it is always better to over-recruit on these programs, which often have a high dropout rate. So I think that we followed the strategy of recruiting more participants in order to ensure that even if we have dropouts, we still are meeting our targets. In this instance, we didn't have as high a dropout rate as we'd anticipated, which is a good thing, and 729 young people were employed through various programs. I will then hand over to Bernie, who will take us through the Tourism Sector Support Services report.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, good afternoon. Bernie Mayer from the Tourism Sector Support Services branch. I'm acting for DDG Morongwa. We have eight key performance indicators that I will take you through on the targets and the progress for quarter one. So these are on slides 33 to 61 in the presentation. So I think if we start with the initiatives around transformation and the implementation of initiatives to promote the in the sector. In quarter one there, we had three initiatives that were needed to be supported. The first was to appoint a service provider to conduct surveys. This has been done. The service provider was appointed and are conducting surveys to monitor the implementation hereof. The second target there on page or slide 34 is the council meetings of the Tourism BE Council that the department is serving as the secretariat for. There had to be one meeting held. There were in fact three different meetings held during May and June in the quarter. So that was done. Then on slide 35, the third area there under the same key performance indicator is the Women in Tourism initiatives, where there was one networking session to be held at Tourism Azaba. It was in fact held as a networking dinner and a workshop that covered various aspects around the concept document roles and responsibilities in preparation for the department and involvement in Women's Month. Then on slide 56, we move to the second KPI around the domestic tourism work that we're doing. There are three initiatives under here. The first is the development of a framework, and that we had to, in quarter one, have three information workshops around this to work and consult on the framework. There were, in fact, four of them held in May and June in the Free State, in Bloemfontein, in Upington and the Northern Cape, Polokwane and Limpopo, and also in Bushbuckridge and Mpumalanga. And if we move to slide 37, which is around the domestic tourism scheme that had to be developed, so it needs to be in quarter one, we needed to do a draft scheme, and this is this was done, and it relates to the empowerment of emerging tour operators to develop offerings for the domestic tourism market. Then after that, we had we wanted to support one event for designated groups. These are youth and elderly people with disabilities. Youth, elderly and people with disabilities. In fact, there were four of these events held, and these were all in a build-up to the youth event that was held in Parliament in July. So there was these sub-events took place in May and were held in KwaZulu-Natal, Western Cape, Eastern Cape, and Gauteng in the build-up. Then on the next slide 38, this is around the enterprise development work that's being done, the mainly non-financial and support services, where the first target was the selection of 400 beneficiaries for the program. We did not quite make this target by the end of quarter one. There were already, at the end of quarter one, 294 beneficiaries selected. The outstanding 106 beneficiaries were being recruited in collaboration with the provincial tourism authorities, and that only took place in the subsequent quarter. On slide 39, the next target there on the enterprise development is the appointment of service providers to train and develop SMEs. This was also not quite achieved at the end of quarter one. We did develop the terms of reference, but the service provider has not been appointed at that stage due to recruitment challenges. Subsequently, there's also been a partnership formed with the Small Enterprise Development Agency to assist us and partner with us on rolling out the program. Then on slide 40, This relates to the incubator, that's part of the enterprise development work, where the target for the quarter was to support the existing incubators. Support for these incubators was provided. 20 of the SMMEs that are in the Manyeleti and in the Pilansberg incubation incubators were in fact supported through the Hidden Gems Initiative at the Tourism Indaba. And then there were also needs assessments carried out at the Palabora incubator and the Muir incubator in Northern Cape that were the new incubators. And then moving on to the Tourism Incentive Program on slide 41. Here we have four areas of focus that had to be implemented, and we had for quarter one, this relates to the market access support program, the tourism grading support program, the green tourism incentive program, and the tourism transformation fund initiative. So here we have slightly different targets for the different programs. We did not quite achieve the entire one. We had some challenges with the tourism transformation fund. But I'll start with the market access program, where we, in quarter one, had to publish calls for application for the events that took place later during the year. In fact, we were able to publish three calls for applications during the first quarter, which generated 69 applications at that stage. And this was specifically for the Asia Travel Roadshow, the Shanghai Tourism Expo in Zimbabwe, and the World Youth and Student Travel Conference that is actually happening in the next week or two in Scotland. Just to contextualize this, there's some time lags here that needs to be taken into consideration. So a call for application is published, and there needs to be sufficient time given for applications, then processing. So we do this quite a number of months prior to the event. I think we've improved a bit on that process and getting that rhythm correct. So by the end of quarter one, we had the three calls for these events that took place at the end of June and June. Well, the first one, Asia Roadshow, was only taking place in June, July. Shanghai Tourism Expo is happening now, and then the World Youth and Student Travel Conference is happening next year. So in quarter two and three, we had subsequent calls for applications for other events that took place later in the year. Then in terms of the tourism grading program, you'll recall that we changed the program from the initial rebates program that we had into a discount program that pays upfront discounts, and we partner here with the Tourism Grading Council in implementation. We've seen a significant uptake, increase in uptake from the initial rebate program. That we learned many lessons from that, and it's running much smoother now. We had in the first quarter 526 discounts approved in quarter one for the grading, which is more than double what we did in the comparable period in the previous year. So the program is picking up, and we're on target for reaching or doubling the number of discounts offered as compared to the next year. So this year we will actually double what we've done last year. So we're very comfortable with that, and it, most of the teething problems have been smoothed out. The Green Tourism Incentive Program is the program that we're implementing with the IDC, and it looks at energy efficiency. It is a bit more of a complex project because it involves applications that then need to be screened and assessed, and once they're ready, they go through an energy audit process, which means that an energy auditor has to visit the site and do an audit, electricity audit or energy audit on that particular application, after which that process then gets reviewed, and the report, we do this in partnership with both the IDC that administers the program and the National Clean Air Production Center, which is an entity under the DTI, and they're responsible for the energy audit. So once the energy audits have been completed, the audits and the findings and recommendations thereof go to the IDC for processing, and then there are adjudication committees, that's it. So there's also a bit of a lag time. The program has started well, and it's picking up. Our applications are increasing. We're now in our third application window opened this week. But during quarter one, we only had three projects that were approved at this stage under the program. because the subsequent adjudication meetings only took place later in July and August. So there were only one, was the program opened in November 2017 when the first application window opened. That application window is closed at the end of January, and with that process that these applicants have to go through, there was only one adjudication meeting that happened in quarter one, and in that meeting there were three approvals. So this we expecting to also start picking up. We had some challenges with the energy audits, but that has seems to have been sorted out, so we'll start seeing more progress on this one. Then on the next slide, 42, is the Tourism Transformation Fund that the Minister announced and opened in during his budget vote in May. So it's a fairly new program. Similar to the Green Tourism Incentive Program, it is a bit more of a complex program. It's a capital investment incentive that we are doing in partnership with the National Empowerment Fund. So the application window opened in May, and it was set to close at the end of August. So the applications have started coming in. By the end of quarter one, this reporting period, there was not an adjudication meeting yet. So as a result, we did not meet that target of approving any projects because it was a fairly new program. So we also had subsequently had further discussions with the NEF on amending and improving the MOA that we have with us. Sorry, I needed to say that there were an adjudication meeting that took place at the end of quarter one in June, but there were no approvals in that meeting. So hence the reason for not achieving that target. These things are being addressed, and we will see an increase in these going forward in the number of adjudication meetings held. Then going to the next point on our key performance indicator, number six on slide 43. This relates to the community tourism enterprises supported, and there are five initiatives under this for five areas: Vitsitsuk in the Free State, Kula Village in KwaZulu-Natal, Emazizini in KwaZulu-Natal, Rampampa in Northwest, and also Vilakazi Street in Gauteng. So the first target there was to have stakeholder consultations with these five communities on the work. And these all took place, all these communities were consulted. And then the second target there was the appointment of a service provider. And by the end of quarter one, the service provider was not appointed yet. This was basically delayed a bit by the feasibility studies and the business plans for these projects that need to inform the terms of reference. So they were not ready, and we could not publish and appoint by the end of quarter one. On slide 44, relates to the work around the visitor services implemented, and the projects there involve the application of the National Standard for Service Excellence, SANS 1197. That had to be implemented in three visitor information centers. The visitor information centers that we focus on here is St. Lucia in KZN, Port St. John's in the Eastern Cape, and the Philandsburg National Park Visitor Information Center in Northwest. The first quarter target is the report on the implementation of the first phase. This report was developed, and it talked about the stakeholder engagements that were done with these areas and visitor information centers. And that relates to improving service excellence in these centers. On slide 45, the second area is the journey to service excellence. And this is an existing program that has continued to be implemented for this quarter. There had to be stakeholder engagements in the two small towns that we targeted, and this included Jozini in KwaZulu-Natal, as well as Port St. John's in the Eastern Cape. So these stakeholder engagements took place on 5 and 7 June, respectively. So that has been achieved. Then if you move to the next slide, it's 46, talks to the compliance with the service delivery charter in terms of managing tourism complaints. The quarterly target here was a progress report on tourist complaints that have been received. So that report was submitted and the target achieved. You'll see that on the subsequent slides, 47 to 50, there's a few graphs to give feedback on the nature of these complaints. So during quarter one, there were a total of 14 complaints. You can move on the slide. You will note that all 14 were of a domestic tourist nature. It were not international tourists. On the next slide, you will see that it related mainly to refunds, probably related to cancellations, and also then four of them were on tour service. On the next slide, you will see the provincial distribution, where the most of the complaints, six of them, were from the Western Cape, followed by complaints from Mpumalanga and KwaZulu-Natal, with no complaints from Limpopo and Northern Cape during this quarter. On the next slide, the status of these complaints, you will note that there are still seven of them. At that time, there were still seven of them that were being in process of being assessed. Five have already been referred to relevant authorities, and two have been resolved. That takes us through the complaints and that report. Then on slide 51 is issues around visitor improvement still on the accreditation schemes or framework for accreditation schemes, which in quarter one involves a consultation with stakeholders on the draft framework. These consultations were held and informed that process, and the stakeholders consulted included the National Consumer Commission, the Consumer Protection Forum, the South African Bureau of Standards, SABS, and also the Tourism Service Complaints Management Forum. We move to the next slide, 52. Continuing with this, there were on initiatives to improve improving visitor service implemented. We also had to do stakeholder engagement on joint awareness campaigns. These did take place by quarter one. And in terms of the tourism monitors that had to be enrolled, in Gauteng we had to enroll 200 monitors, and that program was implemented with 200 monitors starting their training and was implemented. If we move to slide 53, and this actually takes us to the end of the presentation, slide 53 to 60, are all related to the tourism human resource development work that we are doing. And there is, in fact, nine different initiatives here. This is a lot of work that's covered here, or different projects. The first target there relates to the training of young chefs, the National Youth Chef Training Program. This is ongoing implementation. The program has been implemented in quarter one, and there were 704 youth that were enrolled in the program, and those certificate learners also wrote exams in June. Then on the next slide, relates to the Blue Flag training program, which had to be implemented. This is also a longer term implementation process that went in 2019. By the end of quarter one, there were 176 stewards that were in the program, 81 of them from the Western Cape, 41 from Eastern Cape, and 45 from KwaZulu-Natal. Unfortunately, there has been some dropouts. These were for various reasons related to permanent employment offers or people that just realized this is not their thing. The next one is the Sommelier program. This was implemented with 282 learners enrolled in the program. Also, unfortunately, some dropouts. Moving to the next one on slide 55, relates to the food safety program. This involves the training of a service provider. The service provider has not been appointed at this point or at the end of quarter one because there's been some delays in the procurement process. But that's moving ahead. And then moving on to the next slide, 56 is on the Hospitality Youth Program. This is also ongoing with 102 learners from Free State, 207 from Northwest, and 300 from Limpopo. If I move on to the next one, is the recruitment and selection of youth for the Hospitality Youth Program, with training providers appointed in Eastern Cape, Gauteng, and KwaZulu-Natal and Mpumalanga. Then in the next one is the NTCE, the Memorandum of Agreement on the National Tourism and Careers Expo. There has been a draft MOA in place, but it's not been finalized, so the MOA has not been concluded at the end of quarter one. It was still under negotiation, so that delayed the process a bit and resulted in us not quite achieving the targets at that time at the end of quarter one. Then on slide 59 is the relates to the women, 40 women that's in the executive development program. A quarterly report had to be developed, and this was developed with the 40 ladies in the development program. And almost at the end was the tourist guides training, which is the next one there. Recruitment of candidates and suitable candidates had to be done in quarter one, and this was done for the identified areas, the Mangalisa Wetland Park, the Cape Floral Kingdom, and Kruger National Park. There were some delays in the Kruger National Park recruitment, and as a result, the training did not commence yet at that point. And then the second last one is the Resource Efficiency Training Program, also part of this KPI, where stakeholders had to be consulted on this, and this was done with stakeholders in the Eastern Cape, Free State, and Western Cape consulted during quarter one, and that recruitment process initiating in those provinces as well. And then on the last slide, slide 61, is the capacity building for local provincial government, where two information sharing sessions were conducted in Limpopo province, in Polokwane, and as well as in Tzaneen, with this happening in quarter one. Thank you, Chairperson and honourable members. That's the presentation from the Tourism Sector.
Thank you, and honourable members. I will present on Program 1, which is Corporate Management. I would like to indicate that we have 17 targets under this program, 16 of which we achieved, and then one was partially achieved, and I will elaborate on that one when we get to it. Starting with slide 63, which deals with the number of strategic documents developed or submitted. The first one deals with the ATP for 2019-20, the development thereof. In quarter one, we reviewed the organizational performance management guidelines for 2018-19. And then we also submitted our fourth quarter performance report, as well as the performance information for annual report to the Auditor General. Slide 64, we also still on strategic documents. We prepared and presented our fourth quarter risk analysis report to the Risk Management Committee, also developed and submitted our SAT fourth quarter oversight report. Slide 65, the second KPI deals with our vacancy rate, which was still maintaining at 6.4%. And then KPI 3, representation of senior management services, as well as people with disabilities and black representation, were on target there with all of them. Slide 66. Relates to our workplace skills program. For quarter one, we're to implement 25% of the WSP, and we achieved that by implementing four skills programs. The first one is basically dealing with the development and submission of the WSP, and the three training programs, which are protocol training, PowerPoint presentation skills, and people management and supervisor skills. And then on KPI 5 deals with our management of our labor relations matters, and we're fully compliant there with our 8 cases and with one collective bargaining one. Slide 67 deals with the implementation of our 3-year ICT strategic plan, which we have revised and developed our new one for the year. We also implemented on our deliverables under ICT, and it was really around systems upgrades and maintenance. Slide 68 deals with the submission of our annual financial statements for 2017-18 to National Treasury and Auditor General. And then KPI 8 is about implementing 30% of our annual internal audit plan, which we achieved. Slide 69 relates to the implementation of our communication strategy. They were to implement it entirely. We achieved 91.7 achievement of it, and that's because we had to withhold one of our newsletters, and it's part of a process we're undergoing where we're reviewing the effectiveness of our newsletters, looking at our audiences and seeing how we best present the publications that we have in the department. However, I must say that by the second quarter, whereas in the first quarter we had to produce 3 newsletters, by the second quarter we had produced 4, and the fourth one was a special edition on Mandela Day. So we're caught up with that target, which we're not fully able to achieve in quarter one. And then on our last one, the KPI 10, which deals with procurement from BBBE compliant businesses, we're fully compliant there. And this is dealing with enterprises in contributor status levels 1 to 5. And then the next slide, Chair and Honourable Members, just deal with our human resource information. And I must just point out that the information presented here is preliminary at the time that we're providing it to the members. So you will see that when we report on the finalized numbers, the documents, the numbers may vary once we've verified them. However, they're on the first slide. It just speaks to the occupational bands that we have, including the interns that we're supporting. And then that's slide 72, and then slide 73 basically confirms what I've already indicated regarding the representation of Black people and people with disabilities. And that's the end of my presentation. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chairperson, members, and ladies and gentlemen. I'm going to present the budget information. We have 4 programs on slide 75. Administration has a budget, total budget of 271.415 million. Expenditure to date in the quarter was 55,169,000. And the total spend of the budget is 20%. Projected quarter one expenditure was 72,880,000. The variance between our projected quarter one expenditure and actual expenditure is 17,711,000, which is a 24% variance between projected and actual. The main reason for the variance in the first quarter is due to the delays in the disbursement of funds for office accommodation due to outstanding invoices from the Department of Public Works. For the second program, Tourism Research Policy and International Relations, we had a total budget of 1.281 billion. We've spent for the first quarter 964,433,000, which is 75% of the total budget allocated for this program. The projected expenditure was 967 3,617,000, and the variance is 3,184,000, which is 0.3%, which is not material. A point to note there is that the percentage expenditure here is large. It's owing to our transfer to SAT, which we make in advance for them to be protected against currency exchange rate fluctuations. Going to Program 3, Destination Development, our total budget was 401,754,000. Expenditure for quarter one is 49,163,000, which is 12% of the budget has been spent up to quarter one. The projected expenditure was 86,636,000. The variance between projected and actual expenditure is 37,473,000, which is a variance of 43% between actual and projected. The variance is mainly attributable to the delays in payments related to the expanded public works program. Projects as the department ensures that proper contract management processes are in place before approval of payments. The fourth program, which is the tourism sector support services, our total budget allocation for the program is 306,653,000. The expenditure for quarter one is 57,075,000. We've spent 19% of our budget up to the end of the first quarter. Our projected quarter expenditure was 81,721,000, or a variance between our actual and projected is 24,646,000, which is a 30% variance. The variance is mainly attributed to the delays experienced in the finalization of contracts and MOUs with the project implementers of the TIP program. Of the budget of 2.261 billion, we've spent 1.25 billion up to the end of quarter one, which is 50% of our budget. The projected expenditure for the department was 1.208 billion. The variance between projected and actual is 83,014,000, which is a 7% variance in total. Moving on to the next slide, it just speaks to expenditure for economic classification. For current payments compensation, our budget was 310,353,000. Our expenditure was 73,659,000. And as at the end of quarter one, we've spent 24% of our budget allocation. The projected quarter one expenditure on compensation was 75,539,000. And we have a variance of 1,880,000. For goods and services, our total budget was 245,560,000. Our expenditure for the quarter was 35,372,000. And we've spent a total of 14% on goods and services up to the end of the quarter. Our projected expenditure on goods and services was 66,733,000. Giving us a variance of 31,361,000 between projected and actual. Under transfers and subsidies, departmental agencies and accounts, we had a budget of 1.232 billion. We've spent 965,745,000, which is 78% of our budget. The projected expenditure on this item was 955,595,000, and we sort of overspent by 10,150,000. The next category, higher education, we didn't have any budget or expenditure in that category. Foreign governments and international organizations, we had a budget of 2,508,000. We spent 2,349,000, which is 94% of our budget, and the projected expenditure for the quarter was 2,508,000, and the variance is 159,000 underspent.
public corporations and private enterprises is 161,501,000 budget. We spent 1,590,000. That's 1% of that particular item. The projected was 43,010,000. We have a variance of 41,420,000 between the projected and actual. Non-profit institutions, we have budgeted 472,000. We haven't yet transferred any of that money. We projected 236,000 to be spent by the end of the first quarter, giving us a variance of 236,000. To households, transfers to households was 84,852,000 on budget. We spent 6,281,000, which is 7% of our total budget allocation spent up to the end of first quarter. The projected expenditure for households was 20 million, and the variance between projected and actual is 13,719,000. Moving on to the item capital assets, under buildings and other fixed structures, we had a budget of 218,594,000. The expenditure was 37,367,000, and we've spent basically 17% of our budget on buildings and other fixed structures as at the end of the first quarter. The projected expenditure was 42,878,000, and the variance is 5,511,000 between projected and actual. Machinery and equipment, we had budgeted 5,297,000. We've spent 2,279,000, which is 43% of our total budget allocation for the quarter. The projected was 2,296,000. There's a variance of 17,000 between projected and actual. For software and other intangible assets, we had a budget of 205,000. We've actually spent 1,154,000, which is a large variance between between our budget and expenditure. The projected was 59,000, and we sort of overspent by 1,095,000 between our actual and projected. Payments for financial assets, which is we don't necessarily budget for this item, which is to do with debts and losses. 44,000 worth of expenditure that has been written off, and the variance there is therefore 44,000. The variance under current payments, transfers and subsidies and capital assets is specifically due to the Standard Chartered Accounts reporting requirements, whereby specific expenditure is required to be disbursed under items where the budget has not necessarily been allocated to. These variances will ultimately be eliminated via shifts in the latter parts of the year as we move on. The total variance between actual expenditure and projected expenditure is explained in the previous slide per program, which is to do with the delays in the finalization of contracts for our key programs, being TIP and EPWP. That's the end of my presentation, honourable members. That will be our submission.
Thank you, Tim and DC, led by yourself. Honourable members, the presentation as reported is before us. Can I call for the engagement into the first quarter performance for the financial year 2018-2019? By the show of hands, I shall note you. Honourable Bam, followed by Honourable Mamkomo, in that sequence. Over to you, Honourable Bam. Mama Sehel, I note you.
Thank you, Chairperson, for the opportunity. May I again acknowledge the presentation by the department. First of all, I would like to I'm not sure how to put it in this thing. Or given the delay already incurred in the first quarter of the 2018-2019 financial year, what undertakings is the department making to ensure that the completion of all the projects in the 2018-2019 annual performance plan by the end of the year? That's number one. Number two, what are the causes of the delays that led to the deferral of the signing of contracts relating to training projects? In slide 24, I think, to diversify and enhance tourism offerings, what do you hope to do in the areas mentioned in slide 24? When can we expect the master plan to engage with? Those are the areas mentioned, like Sutherland, Port St. John's, Orange River, and so on and so on. Also, slide 35. Do you evaluate the impact of the women program that you say you are giving? Like, for instance, at the end of the Women's Month this year, or is it too soon to ask, have you seen any progress or the results of those programs? Slide 36, very close to home. The programs you say you've got for the elderly, I'm very interested personally to find out what those programs are. Slide 39, you say something about FIDA. Do you ever evaluate the outcomes at these offices, the FIDA offices that you have sprinkled all over the country? Because sometimes the quality of output there is always questionable. And like, for instance, in slide 44, also the tourism centers, tourism information centers. Some of these centers are very poor. I think we need to advise that they must be inspected and evaluated ever so often, because sometimes they are not helpful. What happened to the research papers commissioned by the department over the years? And what impact has these studies made to inform the strategic direction of the tourism sector in the country? Youth placement, that's the last one. The youth placement, aren't you producing more than the industry requires? Because you find a lot of these so-called trained tourism or hospitality trained people hanging around without work, and when they are employed, they usually are expecting to get at least the basic $3,500 a year off from any place, whether you are in Joburg or you are in the Bundu Flagstaff. They expect to be given $3,500. Isn't there a way you can regulate that kind of expectation from your graduates? The tourism transformation fund. Why have you relegated your responsibility to areas like NEF and IDC? Because those people's expectations and their forms are just unnavigable by the ordinary person. And is it because you lack capacity or what that you have relegated your responsibility to these centers? I thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Chairperson, I would like to thank the department for the input. And my first question would be on the 40, I think you said 40 women who are in a particular program. I just want to find out about the very women. Exactly what type of level of business are they in? And when do they stand to graduate and actually go further, you know, from this small to medium and whatever, until when they go really advanced? When does that happen? Which are the mechanisms that you are using to actually ensure that those women grow and later compete with the best in our country? Secondly, it's the issue of the recruitment of young people. I've noted that when we were given the information on the provinces where most of these recruits are coming from, one gets a feeling that, you know, it's some of the other provinces, but then you don't get recruitment in others. Now, I'm not sure if that happens because there's specific skills which are needed per province. That would probably maybe might influence the recruits, because I noted that at one of the inputs, it was more students from the other provinces or more young people from other provinces, and there were hardly any from Gauteng. Now, I would like to find out if maybe in Gauteng there is a specific way of doing things, or there are young people who are recruited for a specific task, because definitely I wouldn't expect them all to be doing the same thing from the different provinces. And the third matter, which I would like to really get an information on, is the financial information. You know, whenever people talk about finances and how much is spent, I'm always on the lookout for what I would term genuine savings. Are there any savings in what has been given to us here on financial information? I don't mean underspending or not spending the money at all. I mean savings, where we can actually say we were given probably 20 rands to go and buy an item which was costing 20 rands, but we managed to buy it for 16 rands, so we actually got a savings of 4 rands. That is what I'm talking about. What's in it for us in such a way that we can also say there's something that we got in, you know, in return? I'm aware that most of these templates, especially our financial templates, they do not have a column which clearly stipulates a savings. But we need to find out about that. Are we actually getting value for money in whatever we're doing? And lastly, Chairperson, when all is said and done, we need to know how much we've benefited as a country, or what difference have we made as far as eradicating poverty, you know, disease control, unemployment, what type of a dent we've actually made on it in such a way that we've made a difference. So I would like to find out at the end of it all, even if it's every quarter, because you need to use money, and if you use money, you need to know what difference are you making. How much of that are we actually doing? How much can we say we are also contributing towards eradicating unemployment, poverty, all the other ills that we have in our country? Thank you, Chair.
thank you very much, Honorable Chair. And let me thank the department for the presentation that they've just made. The first issue here, which is general, is about late submission of the presentation to us as the committee members. I just want to check as to whether it is not possible, because it's long that we've been talking about this, for us to get the presentations in time. Is there no other way that we can do it in such a way that we are finished with the reports on time or the presentations on time so that we get ourselves ready? Secondly, is about the targets. I realize here they had 88 targets, Honorable Chair. They achieved 72 and not achieved 16. Again here, I think as we did mention even in the past, is to check as to whether do they really verify as to whether their targets are smart. Are they realistic? Are you able really to reach all those targets? Because in most cases we find that some of your targets you depend on certain departments for you to achieve them, which might make it very difficult for you at the end of the day to achieve. So I just wanted to check as to whether you do scrutinize them and then make sure that what you have at your target you can at the end of the day be able to achieve. The other issue is on slide number 19, where you are talking about the youth that have been trained, but you are unable to place them because you are still going to verify the municipalities. I want to check as to whether how is our application forms when we recruit them. Are we not including in those application forms when we recruit them things like where do you come from, your municipality, where you come from, and so on, so that at the end of the day when they finish, you don't have to worry again by saying how do we place them, because the form itself will be telling you where we to place those particular learners. I just want to check on that one, how you normally do it, or how do you, going forward, how are you going to overcome this type of a problem? Again, it's on slide number 38, where your target was to have 400 beneficiaries on your program, but at the end of the day it was 294, and you still have 106 pending. What could be the challenge of us not being able to recruit enough number from the onset, and how do you plan to eradicate this type of a challenge going forward? The issue of incubators, I don't know whether maybe you did provide the information which I might not have seen. How many of the provinces are having these incubators, and how many are still not having them, and how are you going to ensure that the ones that do not have, they also have the incubators? Because I think this is a very important program that can assist those small projects. Okay. All right, I'm done. Thank you so much.
All of members, I also want to add some few questions, but I want to pick up from where Honorable Masihela has left on with the issue of the timeous receiving of the presentation and the reports to the secretariat and in Parliament, because for this meeting, the secretariat emailed us the presentation and documents by Monday at 15:14 hours, which was 3:15. And I don't think we have ample time to look into the presentations, to look into the reports, and be able to apply our minds as we prepare for meetings on Tuesday and the meetings on Wednesday. Can we request that the department ensures that they stick to the timeline that we have requested them to at least give us their presentation by Friday afternoon, so that over the weekend we are able to look into the presentations and be able to apply our minds and be able to engage with you meaningfully. So, I just want to overemphasize that aspect, DG, so that it's minuted, so that moving forward we are able to remind you of decisions that we took in this platform. Honourable Ford, you had some. You had your hand up.
Just three quick questions. One is on air access. Just want to ask the department in terms of the air access program. I know that mention was made at previous committees that you are looking at KZN, Gauteng and a few other provinces. So if you can just give us some feedback on the air access program. The second one is tourism incubators. Perhaps as a key performance indicator relating to your work in places such as townships to develop more tourism products within townships so that we can stimulate the economies in destinations which were not previously part of the mainstream tourism. What are you doing in that space? And then thirdly, the issue with regards to the conversion of state-owned municipal resorts was in the previous National Tourism Sector Plan. I've been raising it since the beginning of this committee. I just want to ask the department, what are your plans with regards to the conversion or at least the establishment of triple P's in that space? You've listed some places where you are doing upgrading of parks and reserves and so on, but we still have a situation that many of our municipalities have tourism assets that are not properly utilized for tourism benefit. And so I know that we are working with certain municipalities to help them develop tourism plans and so on, but I do believe that those tourism assets can play a much bigger role if it's properly utilized. And last week, the Charter Council specifically referred to that as a possibility. You were in that meeting, that those type of assets could be used to transform the tourism industry. So I do believe that there's some big benefit in that particular aspect, and so if the department can just give me some feedback on that. Thank you.
Thank you, honourable members. I have three questions. On slide 20, on the issue of the trained 600 youth, and then you mentioned that they still need to be deployed. Now, deployment can mean many things. Perhaps just to clarify what were the glitches there and what is the strategy moving forward, so that you don't train people and then they sit, and at the time when they are sitting they get frustrated and some of them even lose interest. You know, we are adding to the unemployment crisis that the country is facing. Perhaps a strategy moving forward so that when you finish training these young people, you place them on the relevant job that they were trained for. The second one is on slide 34, on the issue of the, you mentioned that you do the secretariat for the Charter Council. Now, in my view, the Charter Council was supposed to be an autonomous structure that is able to reflect on the industry and be able to also reflect on yourself, on your space, on what are the deliberate policy environment that you are actually ensuring that there is transformation, the role that you play. Now, when you, I find this ambiguity here when you do the secretariat and yet, you know, perhaps there's some conflict there. Will they be able to critique you sharply so when you are giving them the assistance or you are doing their secretariat. Members, I'm asking this question because we are faced with this, a situation where transformation is happening at a slow pace. Perhaps the Charter Council is not better placed with you as the secretariat. It should be an arm that would be autonomous in a sense that would be able to reflect on the work that is done by the department and also reflect on what industry is doing. Perhaps moving forward, what are the better methods and ways where the Charter Council can be able to function. And then on slide 42, the mention is made that the adjudication committee said but was not able to come up with anything with regard to the tourism transformation applications that were there. Now perhaps an explanation should be given to us to say what was the status. Perhaps all those that applied did not meet the requirements. What were the glitches there for the committee to sit and not come up with anything with regard to those that had put in applications to access the funds in the tourism transformation fund. And then because you mentioned that you said so your target there is just you set and no outcome was reached out of what you had set, because a committee I believe should be a standing committee that's there, but you can't now just meet the target by sitting and not coming up with anything. Perhaps an explanation should be given to us. Over to you, DG.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. I think I should give an opportunity to the colleagues to start. I will start with Melin to explain the issues around the incubation. And then I will go to Benny to explain the issues around the transformation fund. Melin may also want to share some of the current work that is being done with regard to independence. But I must also just state for the record, Honorable Chairperson, that the view you share is the view I shared from the beginning. It is the view that the department shared from the beginning. So the most important part is that we will need to have industry on board so that they are able to carry this. If you look at the other Charter Council, they are not primarily within the fold of government, if one could put it like that. But the independence has never been compromised. So as a result, the chairperson does summon me and say, I want to know what the department is doing. We are doing this. I would like to hear what the issues that you as the department are doing. And also she would go to the industry as well. But somebody has to give them a start. So that's really where it came from. Then we will go. I will attend to the financial questions. I think they are accounting officers' questions. Then I will deal with the DDGs will then deal with the Shabila and the Anamida will then deal with the other aspects. I will deal with the broader questions that have been raised.
Thank you, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. In respect of the incubators, we currently have four incubators. It's Palabora in Limpopo, Pilanesberg in the northwest, Meer in the Northern Cape, and then Manyaleti in Mpumalanga. Two are operational, and service providers have been appointed to actually run those, and those programs are in place, and we have up to 50 businesses that we support on an annual basis. In terms of Meir and the Manyaleti area, the service providers have yet to be appointed there because we are in the process of expanding our panel, but we have done due diligence in the areas around businesses that need to be helped. We've done the needs analysis So once the service providers have been appointed, we are ready to run. How we select incubators, Honourable Member, is in relation to either a tourism and or a poverty node. So in the areas that I've indicated, you'll see Palaborwa is Kruger, Pilanesberg, obviously Sun City, etc. And for this year, we've identified two incubators that we hope to open, and they are actually in responding to the call for township development. So they would be, we are looking at feasibilities being done, and two feasibilities have already been completed for the Vilakazi area in Soweto and also in Ekurhuleni as well. There's also a request from the Eastern Cape Province, for example, in the Mthatha area for us to look at that. So it is in response to tourism and or poverty nodes that we establish the incubators. In terms of the SMEs, the 400 beneficiaries. The 400 beneficiaries are actually for the entire year. And what we try to do is start as early as possible with various interventions that we need. So we're not concerned that we haven't been able to get to 400 right off the bat. We are engaging provinces around that so we can put our interventions in place. But as the plan also shows, we have the Improtec program, which is run in conjunction with CEDA, and Improtec is actually a program developed by Harvard University for emerging entrepreneurs. So we believe we're making quite an impact there, and we are able to assist, and we are almost already at the 400 based on the intervention that we made through the provinces. The other question, DG, I'm not sure if you want me to take those on the Executive Development Program and the Women in Tourism. The Women in Tourism Initiative, we, as indicated, we are not in the process yet to evaluate, Honourable Member. We have, it's just a program that has gotten started, and we re-looked at the concept document because we wanted to make a greater impact. So what has happened now is we're going to have the establishment of women in tourism chapters across the 9 provinces. We've been able to successfully launch 4 out of the provinces so far. We wanted to do all 9 provinces. With very targeted and specific initiatives. We have a joint partnership with one of the commercial banks to do training for the women. We also are finalizing an agreement with the Institute of Directors of South Africa to also train women in the Women in Tourism chapters. So we will have very targeted initiatives, and then we'll be able to measure. Previous programs, we held workshops and just sort of more information gathering on what women needed. Now we have very targeted interventions in that respect. The Executive Development Program is as a result of the findings of the transformation study which was presented here last week. It has been going for a couple of years now, and it is candidates that we get from existing tourism establishments. The large as well as the small and medium businesses as well. It's very successful, and we had our graduation actually just a couple of weeks ago, and most of those women are in have been promoted to GMs in Sobosan, for example. We've got quite a few that are actually GMs in their programs, and also are working very well in the smaller establishments. So it is, they've actually been a cry for us to increase the program because it is going so well. And we now have also our mentors that have come from that program that are mentoring women that are in just starting out in the tourism business. So it is something that we think is having the desired results we set out to achieve.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson and members. I will cover the questions on the Tourism Transformation Fund. There were 2 questions, one from Honourable Bum and also from the Chairperson. Maybe also, why are we partnering with the National Empowerment Fund and the IDC on these programs? Chairperson and members, I think it's important that we partner with as many organizations as we can. Partners on implementing projects, because it helps us to expand our reach and our capacity limitations to address those. So in the case of the Tourism Transformation Fund and the mandate that the National Empowerment Fund specifically has on transformation, it was a natural partner for us. And then there are the issue of capacity, where they have very specialized skills, and they have accountants and project managers and people that work with these types of projects that we don't necessarily have in the department to that extent and level of extent. They also have the processes and capacity to process large amounts of applications. So we did not have those systems in place at the time. So that was the reason for the partnership mainly. It is a matter of skills and capacity and also their capability. But I think we've also noted the challenge around the complexity of forms and application processes. We note that, and that links to your question around the approvals as well, Honorable Chair, in that we find we need to acknowledge that it's early days for the program, so we are going through a few challenges and we're trying to resolve them with our partners and progress being made on that. But the forms are complex, but it is also required in terms of BFMA. These are public funds and we need to take care with managing those. And the projects go through quite a strenuous due diligence process to ensure that when we support projects, it's viable projects. I think there's a risk in funding projects just for the sake of funding them, we need to be very clear on those. And I think that is a dual-edged sword. On the one hand, it makes it complex, but on the other one, it ensures that we have proper governance systems in place. So I think that relates to the challenges around the approvals as well, but it also, I think the complexity of the application forms and processes are certainly noted, and we will engage NEF on how we can simplify that. The target on the first quarter was the first adjudication meeting that took place of the SIMSTER program open. So the application window was in fact not even closed yet. It was still open, and we started to adjudicate on those. There were not many projects that were ready because they go through various screening stages and due diligence processes and committees within the NEF. And the ones that came, there were two that were ready to be adjudicated on. And I was not in the committee, I'm not part of the committee myself, but they were sent back for review, for further review, and to obtain additional information because the committee was not comfortable making a final decision. So then there's a process where they get referred back and they then serve on the next committee's agenda. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. Talking to the question around Honourable Baum, I think raised the question around the research papers and what happens to them after we've completed them. They are all on our website. They are available. So it is available to the public. But what we do is we do applied research. So everything that we do is in response to a need. We don't just decide we want to do this research. It's informed by our program. For example, we did a policy review of the tourist guiding sector, which informed the review that is currently happening. We developed a demand and supply analysis for destination development that provides a framework for product development. So that's a tool that can be used. We did subsequent to that a number of workshops taking people through the tool. We did some research on cross-border guiding, which impacted or which resulted in the work that's currently being doing on cross-border training for tourist guides between South Africa and Namibia. We did the last example, we did research on the impact of mega events, which provides a tool that can be used to measure the impact of mega events. So everything that we do is based on with the purpose of applied research, so that we do implement those research. With regard to the youth, the youth and the training of the youth, we recruited youth that already has a qualification. in specific fields, tourism being one of them, or youth that just needs the element of practical experience to complete their studies. We've managed, because we are linking it to the municipality, we've managed to recruit 394, I think, but 206 that relates to specific municipalities. Throughout our recruitment process, we struggle to get those youth in the municipality that they live, or that the outstanding municipalities. We got the youth, but not in the specific municipality that we want them to be. So we are still targeting or aiming to recruit the youth within the municipality, and that's what we're trying to do. We did do telephonic interviews with all the youth that we recruited. The first phase was the training, was actually recruitment and training. And the training was more on data collection and the methodology and what we want them to do. That was the kind of training that we provided them. What now is happening, and what is also taking a bit more time than what we thought, is we need to security vet all of them. We need to make sure that their qualifications are true. We need to check with the municipalities if they are indeed in those areas. So that is what's taking a bit more time. But the youth did know from the start that they will go through a training process, and deployment will only happen from a certain time, and they're aware when that will happen. It's not that they're not aware. I think those were my questions. Thank you very much, Honourable Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. I will try to deal with the questions that are related to destination development. The first one, of course, being related to the master plans, and the second one about the underutilized state assets at a local government level. And then I'll also try to deal with the questions that are related to the expanded public works program. So that relates to the skills development as well as the processes that we follow and delays in procurement, etc. Let me begin with the master plan question. So, Honourable Member, those master plans for all four of them are expected to be ready by the end of March next year, the draft versions of them. The purpose of the master plan is to actually take stock of what exists in a particular region, a geographic region. So it will look at the tourism assets that are already there. It will also look at the potential that exists to create new tourism experiences or products. It also looks at connectivity. So it makes an assessment of whether there are issues related to infrastructure, whether that is from a cell tower perspective, whether that's from an electricity perspective, whether that's from a roads or an aviation connectivity perspective. So essentially, it looks at all of the other infrastructure that supports tourism and enables it to happen, and whether there are gaps that exist between that. It also looks at marketing for a particular area to see whether there is the potential to expand on that. So in essence, the master plan is about holistically developing tourism in the area. The example I've used before is, in fact, the master plan for the Cradle of Humankind. Initially, when that master plan was done, there were 69 products, tourism products, in that area. That master planning exercise began in 1999. Now, in the Cradle of Humankind area, you actually have, at last count, 411 tourism products. So essentially, over the last 20 years, because there was a master plan that holistically looked at how to develop that region in Gauteng, and progressively developed both the infrastructure as well as the tourism elements, you can see that it's expanded from 69 way back then to 411 now. But it takes that long to actually implement a master plan. It's not a process that will happen very quickly. The usefulness of having a master plan is that once it's in place, it then feeds into the IDPs and the LEDs of local government, and it remains then a project that is about holistic development of an area. So it then allows for the long-term investment in an area. So we're anticipating that the master plan drafts themselves for holistic development in those regions of tourism will be in place by the end of March, but it's going to take us a long time to actually progressively implement them. The second issue relates to the underutilized tourism assets. So when we initially did the planning around the budget resort concept, we did in that study establish that there are at least 700 provincial and local tourism, let's say, properties that could be utilized for tourism. What we have been doing is to work with our partners, because none of those properties are actually in our ownership. So we can only work with our partners that actually run and own those facilities. What we're quite excited about at the local government level is that there are currently two initiatives that are being driven by SAUGA, which are about regional economic development. The one initiative is actually in the Karoo region, and the second initiative is in the Pilanesberg-Madikwe corridor. So, and it's called the Bojanala Initiative. So we basically will work with our colleagues at SAUGA, which means that we will be working directly then with local government in the initiatives that they are already working on for regional economic development, and start there as a pilot for how we can actually utilize some of those underutilized assets at a local government level. I think at a national level, we already work quite well with our counterparts at Sandparks and SANB, but it is our intention, Honourable Member Foss, to expand that work, to make sure that we are utilizing and assisting both provinces and local government to utilize underutilized assets. That being said, we can only do that where there is agreement with the parties that actually own those properties. So it is also part of our thinking around how we work on concessions and how we are looking at the idea of developing ways for lack of a better word, to sweat state-owned assets through public-private partnerships, through work with cooperatives, and certainly how that also then gets utilized to leverage transformation in the sector, because it is one of the levers that the state has to actually allow new players to come in and also for new product development. The second set of questions is really related to the delays that we have had in our finalization of procurement, and also in terms of what impact that has on our delivery. So for destination development, I've already spoken to the destination planning manual and the rollout of that work. We're not anticipating any impact on the final delivery in terms of the four targets in destination development. However, for the skills development programs, it is possible that what will happen is that we will likely have challenges with meeting our FTE targets for quarter two, because the procurement and the placement of youth at this point, because it's delayed, means that we haven't put them into training. But we still have a plan to try to make up that full number of 6,355 by the end of the year. So we are looking at our plan for how we still deliver the full target of FTEs, but there will be a knock-on effect with our targets for quarter two and possibly for quarter three. We are also, in light of the challenges that we face around procurement, because procurement is a difficult thing. You can put out terms of reference, but you can't always guarantee the quality of the submissions that come through. And when you're actually adjudicating, you have to make sure that there is complete compliance with the terms of reference. What we are doing to try to alleviate those challenges is to, in fact, set up panels of pre-approved service providers for both our training work as well as our infrastructure work for a period of 3 years. So that terms of reference has gone out. That work closes pretty soon, and we will then have panels in place. What that means is that it allows us then to pre-qualify both skills training providers and professional services in terms of infrastructure service providers. And it means that we would be able to then, within a closed panel, put out these terms of reference. It's still a competitive, open process, but you then actually are able to shorten the procurement process. So in the long run, that is the work that we are doing to actually deal with some of the challenges that we know that we have faced around procurement. In terms of the actual expanded public works program, I think that its purpose is really to provide temporary work opportunities and also to provide skills to a number of youth. So where it is possible, we have tried our best to align that with placement. And we've had very good success, for example, on the chef's training program, where we have an 80 to 90% placement rate of the number of people who are trained to actually workplace placement. But that isn't the initial intention of the expanded public works program. It really is about, given the high levels of unemployment that we have in the country, it's really about being able to provide youth an opportunity to be skilled and to actually have some placement in a space. And it really is about short-term placement. So that's the nature of the expanded public works program. It is the case that sometimes we do train many more people than there are jobs for. But in the absence of that, if we only trained for the number of people where there are jobs, we would have much fewer young people or unemployed people actually having access to the program. So I think the expanded public works program, it's not driven by us, it's driven by the Department of Public Works, and we work within the ambit of what that program is. And until there are changes in the program, we are bound by conditional grants to actually run the program in the way that it is currently run. I think that has dealt with most of the questions. The very last one is around the targets and are they smart. So I think we have said many times at the committee that there is always room for improvement in terms of our targeting and our quarterly targets. Again, some of the challenges, as I've said, even if you anticipate that the procurement process should take you 3 months, if you advertise and you get non-compliant bids, you actually have to go out to anticipate. So we take into account what is the period that is reasonable to be able to make an appointment. But sometimes it doesn't actually happen in exactly that way. There's always room for improvement in our targets, but we do our best to actually plan for them with the information that we have at the time that we publish the APPs.
Honourable Chairperson, I see I've got 4 minutes. I'm going to try and answer this. Firstly, we need to apologize for the delays with regards to the submission of this report. We will make sure that the report gets submitted Friday, if not earlier, in future, for all the briefing sessions that we'll be having with the committee. We also must place on record that our targets are very stretched. They're very stretched, and the reason for that is because we mean well, let me put it like that. We really want to make sure that we have an impact. Resource-wise, we don't necessarily have all the resources that we would love to have. And we'll never get to that scenario where we have got all the resources, particularly in terms of human resources. Which means we've got to pull people from different areas to help one another as we go, while still trying to manage the risks. We face real risks, particularly in the area of procurement, which we manage on the go. And we try as much as possible to minimize that because the exposure is quite a lot of money.
one small thing goes wrong, a couple of millions gone at a go. So we try to just contain that. On a lighter note, maybe I should say that the constitutional democracy that we are, and the constitution having given tourism as a concurrent mandate at all levels, we all should, government, the legislature, we all should be finding ways of how then do we bring some of these collaborative areas to work together. Now, when it comes to municipalities and the products, the things that Shabda was talking about, the realities that we face on the ground is that those products in some instances are entities of a municipality. So we've got to negotiate with the municipality, we've got to negotiate with the board. By the time we reach somewhere and we at least something can be done, we have not even reached a point where we can say, is there going to be a concession at that? So these are kind of long term. Where is all national? And unfortunately, Honorable Forces left. Where is all national? Whether we are working with Sandy, whether we're working with Sandparks, whether we're working with Robben Island, we decide today, we sign an agreement, we allocate, we appoint, and the products are mushrooming. Those products are solid. You go to Cape Agulhas, you'll find that. You go up the road, going to Sisikama, you will find that these are quality things that have actually been developed through this particular process. So there is more work that we need to do with regards to that. If you were to ask me, Honorable Chairperson, today, across all the 200 and something municipalities, what are the projects that are tourism related that are currently taking place, I won't be able to tell you. Those are things we're still working on. And even the provinces will not be able to tell you in totality. We're still working on those things. So we will really count also on your support in your interface with some of these levels, how we can actually get all of these things together. But there is a lot of work that they are doing, packaging this together and so on, so that will assist. Are we making an impact? And I think that's quite important that we should do all these things, but the impact must be visible. We are currently contributing more jobs than mining in the country, as an example. We are contributing directly approximately 700,000 jobs into the economy. The GDP of tourism is just under 3% in terms of its contribution. It's about 2.9 something. 4.4% in terms of employment contribution, and that is direct contribution, not direct and indirect. Over 100, almost 110 billion worth in terms of the GDP contribution. So these are the ultimate outcomes that are directly coming from this. And you do see this. Every time you go to either an establishment, an attraction, you will see movement of all these tour buses. You will see people that are actually serving in hotels, in restaurants, and so on and so forth. Those are it's there. We are able to see it, but it's more that we need to do with regards to the composition of the employment and so on and so forth. Just to add to Medin, the women program, in particular the executive development program, in the first batch of graduation that took place last year, shortly before the graduation, at least five of those women had already been promoted, some to a level of general managers of hotels. So that's the kind of impact it's making. As a result, when we said we've got 20 spaces that were allocated, we had to review that because these large groups of hotels, big names, they are coming in numbers. You find one is bringing up to seven. And these are young women that are at a junior management level with the idea that we're going to have these mass base that will take them to that senior management level, and ultimately the aspect that she's talking about in terms of bringing the directorship education into that is to be able to make sure that ultimately you've got women who are ready to actually assume board leadership levels and so on and so forth. The PFMA issues, are we making savings? We make savings in how we craft our terms of reference, let me put it like that. Because the public funds, you've got to go out and you've got to request for people to bid against whatever you've put out there. You will have to take the one that comes lowest and also complies with the rest of the other things. So it's quite difficult. Sometimes you go to the market to look at how much are these things costing. You get people who come back and they quote you maybe a percentage or two more than what you could get if you were directly going into the market. But because you are supposed to buy in a particular way, the market would dictate to you how this must actually then take place. Ultimately, the entire appropriation has to be spent. So that we have to spend the entire appropriation. Our philosophy with regards to public expenditure is that when money is not going out into the economy, particularly this economy that is currently in this kind of situation, we're going through a recession. When money is not going into that economy, it's trapped. It's money that was borrowed by Treasury. So when we have got money that is borrowed and trapped in the system and it's actually not in the economy, that's where we've got real challenges. And that must be the most objective that we've got to deal with. But what we come back with is, was it spent in a regular manner? Was it spent in accordance with what the PFMA requires to do and so on? So that's what we do, that's what we deal with. The issue of incubators, I know we've shared with you what we are doing and the additions and so on. We are having another conversation internally, which says the strategy will not be sustainable. We are not going to be able to have 5 incubators across all the provinces, which would take, say, 3 to 5 million and so on. We will end up at hundreds of millions, and that money we will not have. So we are saying there's got to be a centralized support mechanism that allows for someone to be able to call and say, these are my issues, how do I go about this, and be able to receive that without necessarily sitting somewhere in an incubator. So that is the model that they are now reviewing and looking at that, so that in future we don't find ourselves supporting one corner of the country and not the other, and that we will have problems, bigger problems with. The air access, Madam Alan, I think that's what you were thinking about when you thought it's probably something. Yeah. We do that work a lot more through SAT with regards to the actual addition of capacity. But it's driven largely through the different provinces. So you would go to Gauteng, you would find the whole detailed plan where Ekurhuleni works with the province, but also works with SAT. You come here, you would find that that's the same approach. You go to KZN, it is the same approach. What we are now working on separately is to make sure that the sustainability with regards to services to small airports that require long-term leases and so on and so forth, which are already effectively giving good services. If you take Honorable Chairperson, the Woodspruit Airport, it gets anything between 65 to almost 80 or so thousand tourists per annum. So we need to make sure that there we are sustainable in terms of the services that are actually rendered to such places. The bigger ones, the market forces will determine whether there is a need for additional capacity to come to OR, additional capacity to Cape Town, and so on and so forth. And what we have observed is that when the numbers are there, there will be someone who wants to bring their aircraft to fly in that particular route. But when the numbers are not there, then we obviously will be having some of these challenges. I think the CEDA matters is solely one program only that we're dealing with CEDA on, which is that training program. And as explained, it's a very reputable program that we work with, and it's something that we would really want to see them rolling out and so on. But other matters that relate to CEDA, we would not be privileged to that. I think Honourable Chairperson, in the interest of time, I might have to stop it.
Thank you, DG and your team. Honourable members, there's just one matter that we need to interface with around the high-level panel report before we are dismissed to rush to the National Assembly. Mr. Monavis, can you take us through on how the process will be?
Thank you, Chair. Briefly, honourable members, you will see on your desk we have put our draft response to that high level panel report, which was submitted to Parliament by that panel. What happened, that report was given to the Speaker, and then Speaker referred it to various committees of Parliament. We were requested, as all parliamentary committees, to respond to that report. Research unit of Parliament, they have made a summary of that, but it is also too long as well, because it's about the 309 pages report. But what has been referred to us, there are two recommendations, two issues, which we have tried to respond to them, and then we've placed the response before the members of the committee so that you can look at it, and then in our next meeting we can see whether the committee members are in agreement. Yes, never. Whether the committee members are really in agreement with what we are proposing as a response to that high-level panel report. We are also told that the Parliament says to us we must respond by the 28th of September. Unfortunately, by that time, members of the committee, all of Parliament, will not be here. You will be in your constituency work. So we are of the view that let's table it to members now so that you can have time to do a rundown on it, and then next week we can take a decision as a portfolio committee on tourism in response to that high level panel report. Thank you, Chair.
On that note, honourable members and ladies and gentlemen, the meeting is adjourned. Thank you.
Sure. Long day.
No, it's better for me because
you're done for the day. More or less. I've got some other things that I also need to get to do. So it's late, man. The problem is it's late. Being in town so late doesn't help. Yes, that's my main thing. Even if I leave now, I'm still going to be stuck. Traffic starts early, man. Okay. Yeah, yes, hopefully. You too, hey? Thanks.
Thank you.